welcome to a special edition of our podcast. We are very excited to be kicking off the CMT Awareness Week with some interviews and also a premiere of the PSA, the public service announcement, recorded by Shadow Stevens, a well-known radio personality. He did a great PSA for us, so we'll be starting our show with that PSA for you, and then we have three interviews with incredible people who all have CMT and are in different places in their life, but we all found some real common threads in our story. So if you have CMT, you're going to be really excited to hear some stories that you have things in common with. And if you don't have CMT, these are some great perspectives on what it is like to live in our current society with an invisible illness or a challenges that are not easily seen. And it's fascinating. And I'm so inspired after speaking to these people about continuing the work to have positive, enriching, authentic lives. And I thank them all for their candor, their honesty, and their showing up with the incredible stories of their lives. So I hope that you enjoy listening as much as I enjoyed speaking to them. And thank you. And spread the word. Send this out. Tweet it. Facebook it. Let's get the word out about CMT, because awareness is going to mean a lot for a lot of people. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Shadow Stevens. I'd like to talk to you about CMT, Charcot-Marie-Tooth disease. CMT attacks the nerves in the arms and legs, leading to muscle and movement loss. It affects 1 in 2,500 Americans, but nobody's ever heard of it, which is why September 19th through the 25th is CMT Awareness Week. Your chance to learn about CMT and why treatments could be just years away. Visit CMTAUSA.org or call 1-800-606-CMTA today.
Hello, we're very glad to have Margaret join us today and share some of her CMT stories for CMT Awareness Week. And what's fascinating is we go around the country, Margaret's from North Carolina, and as we go around the country, we're finding more and more people coming forward with their stories and their family histories. And so I started chatting with her and I said, wait, I need to turn on the recording so we can get this story for everyone. So welcome, Margaret.
Thank you so much. It's so good to be with you today. It's so good to finally meet you.
Well, thanks. I feel the same way. I'm really enjoying getting to connect with all the people that have such similar stories. We can feel very isolated in our little world that we're in, and then we start talking and go, wow, it's not so unusual what I'm going through. So
that's exactly right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. I always thought I was by myself in this.
I did too. Well, and I have it where my parents, so far, I'm waiting, maybe one day someone will come forward and get a diagnosis. But right now I have a very large family and no one has a CMT diagnosis. So I grew up feeling really alone. I'm first generation American. My parents are from Europe and there's no family history at all. We can't even think of anyone clumsy in our family. So I might be that spontaneous.
Wow. I'm sorry, I didn't catch where your family is from.
My dad is from the Czech Republic, and my mom is from the Netherlands.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I had been told by the MDA clinic when I was there that a lot of people from the Netherlands seem to have CMT, but the more I research it, I think CMT is just found everywhere.
I think you're right. I think they're finding it more and more places.
Yeah, because I don't think my family was established in the Netherlands.
No.
So not with black hair and brown eyes.
Probably not. So, and you were saying you're first generation American as well.
Exactly. That's very interesting. I definitely wanted to catch what country they were from.
Right.
My family is Greek. And when you say that, most people think, you know, that I am from Greece. Or that my parents were from Greece. They are from an island that's just off of Greece, and it's called Cyprus.
Mm-hmm.
And it's between Turkey and Greece. And so when I am first generation, the first one in my family to be born in this country, and I have a brother that's 14 years older than I am, so, I really don't know a lot about my family history because my parents had come here when my brother was 12 years old, and then after that, I was born.
Right.
But during the time of my birth, my mother was in a cast, and the reason that she was in a cast is that she had just had her ankle fused.
Oh, wow.
And I have pictures of her being pregnant with me and, you know, being in a cast. I guess she was fortunate to have had an older son, because I think he basically, when he would get home from school, would take care of me, you know, for her to rest, as my parents owned a restaurant. And when they operated on my mother, they thought she had polio.
Oh.
So, you know, so she had the ankle fusion, and I was diagnosed in the late 70s, and the only reason I went to the doctor was, you know, being a 20-some-year-old, I went to the doctor, and I had a sore throat, and I just happened to mention to him, I said, you know what, I can't seem to open these clothespins anymore to hang out my laundry.
Uh-huh.
And I said, do you think I have arthritis? I mean, being 20-some years old, I didn't even know what arthritis was then.
Right.
And he was like, no, let me look at your hands. And so anyway, he checked me out, and he said, no, it's not arthritis, but I need to send you to a specialist. And I was like, why? Do you think I have cancer?
Right.
And so he said, no, I can tell you it's not cancer. And I went to a neurologist, and right away he told me that I had Charcot-Marie-Tooth disease. And I was like, good gosh, what is that?
Right. I know the name is so horrible.
It is, you know, and when you say it to somebody, you're thinking, no, I'm talking to you about my hands, not my teeth.
Exactly. We were saying our greatest challenge with awareness is...
So anyway, I was living in Virginia at the time, and he wanted to send me to the University of Virginia to have further diagnosis there, but I had gone for an EMG, and the people that have CMT certainly know what EMGs are like.
Right.
No fun.
No.
But I'd had one that, you know, I think, it seems like it lasted 10 hours, but it probably lasted for two or three.
Right.
And they sent me on to UVA with this information, you know, in hand, along with my husband, and I had two young babies.
Oh, wow.
And I got friends to watch the babies, and went to UVA and saw the director of neurology, and right away when he came in, you know, no checking of the knees, no, you know, taking that little thumper thing, checking your elbows or anything.
Yeah.
He said, okay, I know what you have. And I thought, well, that is wonderful.
Right.
And he went out and told my husband and told him that he was going to admit me into the hospital for a few days. And I went out and told my husband, I said, I'm so excited. They finally know what I have. And my husband was like, yeah. And when I went into the hospital, you know, UVA is a teaching hospital, so I just had one intern right after the other coming in to see me. And they were there to prove the doctor right, not wrong. And finally, they said I had ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease.
Hmm.
And I, and being, you know, in my early 20s, I'd never even heard of that.
Yeah.
And, after that, I was like, you know, asking these guys, I was like, is there a cure? Is there medicine? And they were like, no. And I said, how long do I have to live? And at that time, they were like, 2 to 3 years.
Oh, my gosh. How
so
awful.
And so one guy, one intern resident said, okay, I want you to start counting backward from 100 by 7. And I just got furious. And I said, you know what?
I couldn't do that.
Yeah, I said, you do it first,
right.
And then I might think about doing
it. Yeah.
And so I just told them all to go away.
Yeah.
And the nurses were fabulous. They kept coming in to me, telling me, you know, keep your faith. We've never seen anyone that looks like you, that has symptoms like you, that has ALS, you know, that's your age.
Right.
And so my husband and I just asked them to please go to their library and bring us information. And we sit up all night reading about ALS. I was so, just so distraught.
Right.
And the next day, I went in to see another bona fide doctor who was going to do an EMG on me. And he did another EMG. And he said, do you know what you have? And I said, yeah, ALS. And I'm not going to say the expletive, but he said, who the heck told you that?
Oh, no.
And I told him, the doctor, the director of neurology. And he said, no. He said, you have a benign disease called Charcot-Marie-Tooth disease.
Oh, my gosh.
And at that moment, I just felt like all of the weight of the world had been lifted off my shoulders.
Yeah.
And I was so excited to find out that it was CMT. And, you know, I've always told people, I said, that was God's way of preparing me to live with this disease for the rest of my life, because I thank God every day that I have this disease, or I would not be here talking to you about it today.
Wow, that is a real powerful perspective. That's a really good perspective. So
it's unbelievable, and I am just so thankful to have CMT.
Yeah,
it's just that you know, so many people do not know about CMT, and it's just so frustrating.
Yeah,
but I'm a very active person. I wear a brace.
Uh-huh.
And I finally gave in a few years ago and started wearing a brace.
Uh-huh.
And now I wear flex. So, you know, my friends don't know. I mean, my close friends know that I have CMT, but I'm in a very active woman's club, 80-some ladies, and just very involved, you know, chair a lot of things, vice president of the women's club, and then we have a newcomers and neighbors club. Last year I was president of it. I am just a very, very active person. I refuse to let this thing get me down. It's not getting me down.
Yeah.
So when I got the information about CMT, I decided to just send it out to all the people that that I know, which is probably 300 people.
That's awesome.
And they were like, you know, what can we do for you? What can we do for you? It was like, donate money.
Yeah.
Let's find a cure.
Yeah.
So I hope that they are. We are so close.
I hope.
If they would just do the funding to find the cure for CMT.
It would be wonderful. They've come so far since I was diagnosed in the early 80s. I was 13 years old. And they have come so far since that point. At that point, they knew it was something genetic, but now they know exactly which protein gene is causing which anomaly in your whole, you know, genetic programming. And they've come far. And they can do a blood test now. I had a blood test that showed, you know, exactly what's wrong. So hopefully once they find exactly what's wrong, it's a little easier to figure out a way to fix what's wrong. You know?
Exactly. And I'm very lucky to live in North Carolina now. I did have that genetic testing. And, you know, like I said, my mom did find out that she had CMT. I took her with me to the Mayo Clinic, and I was fortunate enough to meet Dr. Peter Dick, who he is responsible for having gotten this whole thing kicked off, you know, in this generation to start looking. And the minute he saw my mom, he said, she's the carrier. She doesn't have polio. She has CMT.
Yeah.
And, like I said, my parents had a restaurant. I can remember my mother, who is deceased now, but who died of other causes at age 87.
Right.
I mean, my mother would come out of the kitchen carrying maybe 5 platters in her arms, and I'm doing good if I can carry one plate with 2 hands.
Yeah.
You know, so it affects people so differently. And I know that I have CMT 1B, so, you know, I'm always looking for studies, and you know, if anybody out there knows that they have CMT 1B, you might look into the vitamin, or it's actually just something that you flavor your food with. It's turmeric.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that.
Yeah. So they're giving the vitamin. It's called curcumin, C-U-R-C-U-M-I-N. To mice now, and they're finding that the mice are getting stronger. So I said, heck, you know,
might as well.
I think I'll try that vitamin.
Yeah.
So I ordered it, and I've been taking it for about 2 months now, and my legs feel a lot stronger. And I keep telling the MDA clinic here, which is Duke University, that, you know, this stuff is making me feel a lot better. So, you know, I will continue to take it.
That is great news. And it would be wonderful if some kind of low-level things like that could make a big difference, because I know I know that inflammation is an issue, allergies are issues. There are aggravating factors that make our symptoms either accelerate or feel worse for a certain amount of time. So anything, I've heard of the turmeric, and I've heard of it for arthritis too. So it's interesting that it could help with nerve strength and muscle strength as well.
So
you mentioned that you
the
had
one thing that.
Sorry, go ahead. Sorry.
I'm sorry. You go ahead.
Oh, I was curious about your children. You had children when you found out. And
I have two daughters, and they are grown now and married, and they have two children each, and they decided that they did not want to be tested because, as people know, that with pre-existing conditions, you might want to run into issues. But my daughters are well into their 30s now, and one daughter runs a 5K all the time. So I'm thinking, you know, she probably doesn't have it, but both my daughters are very thin and, you know, are small boned. So I'm always looking at them, and, you know, with my grandchildren, if one ever trips, I'm thinking, oh, God, please don't let them have DMT.
It's so true. So, I do it with my own kids, too.
So anyway, but, you know, my girls just look at me and they go, Mom, if we have it or if they have it, you're an inspiration to us, and that's okay.
Well, that was my thinking when we were contemplating having children was, this disease is very challenging, and it's definitely not something you want on your plate, but it's not something that makes life so overshadowed that you don't enjoy being here. You know, it's not, that was my, and everyone has an individual choice. I honor everyone's choices because there is such a range. There are people who are affected as toddlers. I was a late walker, but I know children are getting surgeries and have very intense symptoms from a very young age. And then other people have very mild symptoms for their entire life. So,
I had to have my ankle fused, and it's ironic. I had my ankle fused when I was 30 years old because we've always had animals, and I was running to get the telephone, and I stepped on one of those bones that you have in your house for a dog. And I stepped on her bone and broke my right ankle.
Oh my God.
Your ankle just goes out from under you, as most people know with DMT. And the doctor told me, he said, you know, it's best that we go ahead and do surgery on your ankle and fuse it. So my right ankle is fused. You know, there's no up and down, sideways, or anything. It is just in one particular angle. And that's why I wear a brace on the other leg. So as far as having both ankles fused, I'm glad that I don't have to do that. But, you know, some people do have to do that. Some people are already in wheelchairs. You know, it affects us so differently. My CMT affects my hands and my feet. But I'm left-handed, but my right hand has just terrible neuropathy. And, I'm living in the South. I mean, it's hot here all summer long, and my right hand is always cold. I mean, you could touch it, and it just feels like, you know, it's going to break off because it's so cold. So, you know, there are all sorts of things that go on with CMT.
There are, and
it's
interesting.
Those
ones don't come to the surface so much, like the cold hands and the cold feet, because I get it a lot with the circulation. And in fact, my last visit to the neurologist, he was more concerned about the cold feet and the circulation issues than any of my numbness or any of those other things. So there's a lot. It affects a lot more than just, you know, your balance or your dexterity.
Exactly. And, you know, I have developed lupus. So I got lupus. I was diagnosed with lupus in my mid-40s, and with that came the end of my career as far as working.
Right.
So I just decided it was time for me to step aside because I was doing a lot of traveling with my job and things like that. Mm-hmm. And just could not do that with the CMT getting worse and with lupus. So I decided it was time to stay home. And, you know, that's where the education starts because I needed to get on disability and, you know, the people that, you go to whatever it is and you apply for disability and they look at you and go, you have what, you know? So, you know, of course I was rejected the first time and, but I was lucky I had worked for a law school, so I knew better than to just give up.
Right.
And, you know, I went back again and said, you know, no, you're going to listen to me, you know, the next time I went, I was loaded with information about CMT. So I did finally end up getting on disability, but it took about a year and a half to get on it.
It's a long time.
But, you know, hopefully people can still work with CMT a lot. I mean, I worked a lot of years with it. So, you know, I'm not suggesting that anybody retire because they have CMT. But, you know, there comes a point in people's lives when they have to make choices. And unfortunately, I needed to make mine then. But that's why I'm so active with other things that I do.
Right. Right. For me, it was where the energy went because my energy resources were so limited. And before I had kids, I could go to work and then come home and crash and get a lot of downtime. Yeah. But once I had kids, I couldn't do that anymore. And I started getting more and more symptoms because I was crashing out all of my bank accounts, my energy bank accounts. So it all depends what else is going on in your life, too, as far as the work goes. But I really encourage people to keep records of their history with CMT because one of my things was I had all these records from like 20 years ago that were all gone. But if I could have brought that to my disability advocacy hearings, then it would have shown a real history there. And, you know, so those were things that I was like, oh, I wish someone had told me when I was younger so I could have prepared for this down the road. So,
exactly.
But that's an interesting, I hadn't even thought about that with the awareness piece. For me, I've always thought of awareness of just having people know what more about what I'm going through, but the whole kind of work environment and political environment and disability advocacy environment, it would help so much if there was more awareness of CMT out there.
That's right, and that's why I think it's so, I mean, I even sent it to our newspaper here and said, you know, this is the week for CMT awareness. It's the first time that we're doing it. Would you mind just doing a little blurb in the paper about it? I'll be glad to talk to you. You know, we need to get the word out there that, you know, that this is a serious disease. And although there are so few of us, but we know that there are a lot of us out there. We, you know,
it's true.
You and I were talking, you know, before we got on the phone and to talk to others. It's like when you first go to a CMT meeting, you walk in and it's like, surprise, there are other people that live near you that have CMT. And, you know, I think it's wonderful to get with those people and to share their experience and your experience. And if you have found something that works for you that you think might work for someone else, because I think we need to be one another's advocates. And I think that, you know, if we could get some sort of, I know that CMTA does have where you can do blogs and things on it, but if more people would get involved with it and write down information that, you know, that helps them out and where they have gone on, you know, the web to find this information, that would be great to be able to share that with one another. And also for our Congress and Senate to know that we're out there and, and we really want some work to be done on it.
Yeah, I
as
keep
far as research, more research.
I keep hoping to get the attention. I was hoping when the Catwoman story came out, the Catwoman in the 60s, that I was hoping that might elevate us. I keep waiting for some big media outlet to pick up
Julie
the story
Newmark.
And some, you know, Oprah or someone to kind of shine a light on our stories and make them common knowledge. It would help a lot. So,
well, you know, we could just do a great big old blast to Oprah or to somebody, and somebody will listen to us. You know, if you're out there listening, maybe we all should just send her a great big old blast.
Maybe we should.
Say,
maybe
hey, we're here. Can you help us out?
I'll put a link on Lankaland, lankaland.com that to her suggestion area, so that anyone who goes there could easily go there and jump on and say, hey, can you put CMT, hereditary neuropathy, on your show as part of because we are huge. It's 1 in 2,500 people, and the CMTA is saying 2 million people are being affected by it. And when I talk to people, it's not just the person with CMT, it's the whole family, the whole community around them that's affected.
Exactly.
So I mean, why not? We matter.
Yes, we do. And we need to help educate doctors as well.
Yes.
You know, I've talked to people that, general practitioners. I'm older than you are, so I've seen a lot more doctors in my life. But, you know, when I say CMT, I always get the same response. And it's so funny. A doctor will say, oh, I knew I should have been listening in class that day when they were talking about it.
That's classic.
I vaguely remember them saying, CMT, what is it?
Yeah.
You know, so here you are educating the doctor.
That's classic, because I was, I talked to Nate Hillard last night, and I said, yeah, the classic line from doctors is like, oh, yeah, there was a page on that in my residency. I'll have to go look that one up.
I mean, it's so funny. Or they say, you know, when they say other, you know, when you check other and then you write down CMT, they have no clue.
Right.
You go in and we should just all carry our CMTA journals with us that tells you what CMT is, and go here, study it. There will be a test on it tomorrow.
That would be great. And there are, I don't want to discredit all the medical establishment. There are people out there that have a lot of knowledge and know quite a bit.
Awesome doctors.
Yes, there are many. And it's becoming a little better. Like when I went to my podiatrist, he was like, oh, you have a classic CMT foot. Like he knew it. It was getting on the radar. So I'm definitely seeing progress.
Yeah, you know, I think podiatrists are probably more aware about CMT than a lot of other doctors.
It's true.
Because I'm like you, I've been to my share of podiatrists, and they knew right away that it was classic CMT foot.
Yeah, yeah.
Old hammer toe.
Yeah, the hammer toe and the high arches, and he said there's a way that the bones meet. They call it the bullet hole in a in an x-ray, because when you see the x-rays, there's this hole between these two bones that isn't there in a typical foot, and it's because the bones aren't aligned the way that they're supposed to. So it was kind of fascinating.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So yeah, to me, I'm amazed. Like when I was diagnosed, like you, it was like, oh, it affects the hands and the feet. And since then they're starting to connect scoliosis to it, and they're starting to connect swallowing issues and even sight issues and hearing issues. And so, I think part of why we've been a little marginalized is that people go, oh, you're a little awkward, you drop things, it's not that big of a deal. But as research gets better, and as patients are becoming better advocates for themselves, I think we're starting to see more of the consequences of this kind of nerve damage throughout the body. It's not just the hands and the feet.
Exactly. Exactly. And, I didn't ever think that I would appreciate getting older and having gray hair, but now if somebody sees me struggling getting a penny out of my wallet or whatever, they go, oh, do you have, arthritis, dear? And I just go, yeah,
That is so awesome. That will be a lot easier, because right now I get a lot of looks because they see me with my young kids and they're just like, what's your problem?
I know. When I was younger, I'd park in the handicap spot if I was going to the mall, because you have to save your energy for when you're in the mall. And I would have people saying, you don't look very handicapped to me, and finally my response would be, thank you.
That's a good response.
So I will explain it to whom I have to explain it to, but yeah. if you're going to be rude to me, then, you know, I don't owe you an explanation at all, and thank you for thinking I look normal.
Right, right, so, true.
That's and to most people, we do look normal for the most part, unless, you know, we, you know, have progressed to the point where we're in a wheelchair or whatever. But mm-hmm. when we, you know, when some if someone were to come up and ask you to dance and you'd go, oh, no, thank you, I don't dance. Oh, right. my gosh, I used to live to dance.
And me too.
But I could no longer do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, that breaks my heart. Or, you know, when somebody takes your hand in prayer and they're thinking, oh, gosh, this lady has the boniest hands and they're freezing.
Uh-huh.
yeah.
It's so true.
I'm sure we can all relate to that being CMT
yes.
patients.
Yes, it's so yeah. true. It's going to be really, yeah. I'm really interested in how this week plays out and as people come forward and I'm seeing online just a network of blogs and stories and forums coming up about people sharing their CMT stories and I love
That's
hearing them all.
Wonderful.
So,
well, I look forward to, you know, listening to the podcast
oh,
that
good.
You've gotten and also seeing that link to Oprah. I think we should all send information to her.
I think we should. Yeah. I mean, what do we have to lose? Nothing.
Nothing.
No,
so she's
well.
Helped so many people in her lifetime. This
oh, yeah.
is her last year, so she says. So let's let her go out in a big way.
Yeah, make a difference
CMT.
For millions of people.
Yeah.
Well, Margaret,
yeah.
I so appreciate you coming and chatting with me and I bet I'll be hitting you up in the future to come for another interview because you've got...
Oh, I would love to. And it's so nice meeting you in yeah. California and
yeah.
me here in North Carolina. That's so cool.
Yeah, I tell you, I love the internet for this. I just, it's amazing.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah.
Yeah. So I hope you have a wonderful day and take good care of
Thank
yourself.
You.
Okay.
You too.
Thanks
you
again.
Too.
Okay. Bye. Hi, I'm happy to be here today with Nathan Hillard, D. Nathan Hillard. He's an amazing author, and he also has CMT, and he came on the show today to share his experiences and some of his perspectives on what it would mean to get awareness of CMT out into the public and the community. So welcome, Nate.
Hi, glad to be here.
Well, we're very glad to have you, and how has life been treating you?
Well... Up until just a day or two ago, I've been having a pretty hard time with the CMT, but it seems to be getting better now.
Yeah. Do you have...
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I know when I was raised with the CMT stories, it was told to me that it was a slowly progressive, you would barely notice it getting worse over time. But I'm actually finding that I find real sways. Like I have bad days and good days and bad weeks and good weeks and... It doesn't follow a linear progression for me. I'm wondering if that happens for you.
In my case, it's like it has plateaus, and then it advances, and then it just stays still for a while, and then I have, like you say, I have bad days and good days with it.
I have the same thing. I have a plateau, and then I have a sharp, like, crash, I almost call it. And then I plateau mm-hmm. for a while, and hopefully I can climb back up again and regain some of my... lost abilities for a little bit, and then I have another crash or however it goes. But,
mm-hmm.
so.
And it's like it's on two different fronts. There's the energy level and how it wipes you out, and then there's how it's progressing through your body itself, you know, how much control you have over, you know, hands and feet and stuff. The progression, that would, like, there'd be times it wouldn't move for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly... In 2 months' time, it might, you know, I might lose a significant amount of foot control or, you know, or lately it's been getting in my hand, you know.
The hands scared me. I was okay with the feet. But when my hands started getting affected, it was like, no wait, this is not okay anymore.
No, they don't make braces for hands.
No, they don't. And when you start losing abilities with your hands, it's really scary. Like when you can't write anymore or when you aren't able to open jars, your kid comes up to you with a soda and you can't open it for them. It's mm-hmm. pretty hard to go ask grandma to open the soda that you can.
I imagine my wife never expected her role to be the jar opener.
No. It's really rough. So you were sharing with me that I have type 1A of CMT and you have type 2. And I'm not sure how well our audience knows the difference between the different CMT types.
Type 1A is generally has to do with the sheathing around the nerve, while type 2 is the axon that goes through the sheathing. It's the axon through the nerve.
Right.
The nerve. And so the degeneration is two different types.
Right. So the effects are fairly the same. It's just the way the nerves degenerate goes the different path.
Exactly.
Okay. So, and I know that when I was diagnosed back in the 1980s, I was 13 years old, and there was just CMT. There wasn't any types. And so over time, as they've done more research and really found which genes specifically are causing the problems, that's when all these types are starting to come up.
Yeah, I'm just hoping they keep finding genes. Maybe they'll someday stop and say, hey, maybe we can do something with this.
Right. Well, I've heard that there may be progress in getting a way to kind of silence, because for me, I have two of the PMP protein 22 gene. It's a mouthful, but they, both of them are sending signals out. So if they could just get one to go quiet, then all of the problems, they wouldn't disappear, but at least I wouldn't have the degeneration continue. So.
Right. Maybe even let us heal a little.
Yeah. That would be really, really nice. I'm feeling that. What was hard growing up was that I got the two stories that if you were young and you started with it, then you probably would have a pretty slow progression. And if you got it when you were older, you might have a faster progression. But I don't believe that anymore to begin with. And then that they nothing talked about the exhaustion factor when I was growing up. And now I just feel like I don't ever get to recover between one challenge to the next. And
I always feel like you have just, run a race.
Yeah. That's what I've heard. It's like you're putting your body through a marathon every single day just to get through the day. So there's no recovering from it. So what would you... Exactly. I know all the guilt that comes along with it, because for most people, we don't look like we have any issues. So it seems like we're very lazy, kind of uninterested, unmotivated people.
Whether that's true or not, we still got CMT, and that's also causing it, right?
Exactly, exactly. I actually learned I'm not a lazy person because of my CMT. Because the minute they told me that I had to rest, I just couldn't do it. It was really hard. So what would you like? I mean, I haven't thought. I live in my little world. I'm very used to telling people, I have this charcot-marie tooth that has nothing to do with teeth and the whole la, 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 and having them look at me and go, huh, that's interesting. But what would it mean to you if the public knew about CMT and we could go, hey, we have a hereditary neuropathy, and they knew? What would that mean to you?
Well, first it would mean having to never say two things again.
That would be nice.
It's kind of like MS.
Uh-huh. You know?
Because that's my standard first line. And two, no, it doesn't stand for country music television.
That's so true.
I have literally had to explain that one, too.
Yep. But the teeth and the country music television one is the really the hard one.
But, it would just be kind of nice for people to just, it would be nice to have them look at you without wondering.
Yes. Yeah.
You can always kind of see them kind of evaluating, well, what does he have? And then when somebody works up the nerve to ask, you tell them and they look at you blankly.
Exactly. That glazed look of like, oh okay. That means nothing.
They were thinking Parkinson's or MS.
Uh-huh.
So you're back to line one. Well, it's kind of like MS.
Yeah, it's kind of like that. It's helped by the Muscular Dystrophy Association, but it isn't a muscular dystrophy because it doesn't affect. I mean, you can just go into this whole lot of talking about it. It would be really nice to just be able to say, this is my challenge, and people go, oh, okay, that would be nice.
Be able to say, this is it, and then not have to, have two paragraphs prepared afterwards.
Yeah, not have to carry the pamphlets around.
Yeah.
So that, it would be good. It would be good. And then,
I think, they're beginning to find out, what is it now? There's one out of every 2,500 now are beginning to, the numbers are, either our numbers are climbing or it's getting diagnosed more.
Yeah, I believe that I think it's a combination. I think that in the old days it was, Auntie M was clumsy and she just didn't like to go outside. And nowadays their diagnosis is getting better, so they're able to tell us what's going on with anti-M, so we're finding out more of the genetic underpinnings of things that used to be just eccentricities. And
I mean, that's perfect, because I mean, that was when we tried to figure out where it came from. You know, we were reduced to family. You know, my great grandmother didn't like to go outside.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
She always stayed in her room.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
But, and then on the other side, I do believe part of it is our communication also, and perhaps people aren't trying. So I know that one of the things I know about CMT, having gone to some of the support meetings, is people try really, really hard to hide it. And they work really hard to not be affected by it. And so it's hard to ask for help, and it's hard to admit that it's difficult. And so we tend to wipe ourselves out in public places and then go home and just crash because, you know, no one's there watching us. So I think that there was a big hesitancy to even go to your doctor and say you were having these kind of challenges. And so now that maybe our perceptions are changing about it and it's not as socially unacceptable to have physical challenges, maybe that's helping people go out.
That sport is a little exotic. I mean, most people just don't go to a neurologist.
No. No. And when I was a kid, it was a very painful test. When they tested me at 13, it was harsh. But now they've got they did that electronic putting they test by putting, for people who don't know, they shoot electricity down your nerves and actually measure how quickly it goes down the nerves. And if it's not going at the rate that it should, they know that there's some kind of nerve damage there. And then they look for what's causing that nerve damage. So for me, it was this kind of exorcist basement where they had me down there and they were shooting electricity down and my nerves. And, you know, I was 13 years old and it was just like, whoa, that was,
oh man,
it was like, it was crazy.
Well, that's it. See, like, I know that there's a 50-50 chance either one of my kids could come down with it.
Yes.
But there's no way I would have them tested for this at this age, not with the tests I've got now. I just couldn't do that to a kid.
No. No, it's much easier now. When I was having the numbness in my hands, he did the test again, and he did it in his doctor's office. It's the technology's gotten so much better, and in a very short time, because, you know, 13 wasn't that long ago, but it was like more of a little zing. It wasn't that painful, but it's the same thing. I have two kids, and they have a 50-50 chance, and I'm not going to test them unless I see a real need.
Exactly.
Like if they're struggling in school, or if they're, you know, tripping over themselves or injuring themselves a lot, then I would go to that next step. But until then, I'm going to just let them enjoy their childhood and not worry about it. So
exactly. Like when my son asks me, why do I wear braces or something?
Uh-huh.
I just tell him my legs got sick.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, at this point in his life, he doesn't need to be living with, you know, the fear of the future.
No.
And,
no.
I mean, when he's a teenager, okay, you know, he might need to, you know, at least start taking some things into consideration, but, you know.
Yeah, be aware of the family history. Yeah, and that was what I looked forward to talking to you about was CMT in the family situation, because we tend to focus on the patient experience, but actually CMT affects everyone around the person who has CMT.
Absolutely.
So it's if we could get CMT awareness out in public, we could help a lot of families, because I know for me, and I've talked to you about it before, when we go out and travel, we're at amusement parks or wherever, and I'm trying to get some help not having to wait in the really long lines because of the fatigue factor and the muscle exhaustion and all of that, I get some seriously looks like I'm trying to work the system. So it would be really nice if that awareness were out there that, hey, there are people with these invisible conditions that they really do need that extra help, and it's really nice when the public extends that hand.
I just signed up my son for Boys Cub Scouts.
Yeah.
And, you know, it requires parental involvement, and I'm going to go to these meetings and all with him. But I know that there are times I'm going to have to figure out a way to approach some parents and say, hey, guys, there are going to be certain things I'm going to need, if I could ask somebody to please help take up the slack a little bit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And because there are just going to be some things I can't do.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I just, you know, that's part of it, is trying to figure out how to approach another adult in that. And,
Well, and it brings all that guilt into it, too. My daughter's involved in the Nutcracker, and they have a requirement of 4 hours of parent participation. Well, I know the evening of, I'm not going to have the energy because I'm there supporting her. So I'm looking at the things to do ahead of time, and it's like sewing and crafting and all these things, and my hands are numb like every single day right now. I can't do any more handwork. So it's that same thing of having to go to these people who are organizing and saying, well, I really don't have the energy to, you know, and it sounds like 4 hours isn't that big of a deal, but it kind of is. So it's really, really awkward because those 4 hours might take me, you know, 20 hours to recover from. Who knows? And so it is that awkward place.
I've written the day that I show up with him and they need me to sign some forms or something, and I'm having a bad hand day. Well, you know, my hands just will not work with a pen and pencil under those circumstances. And it was like the post office the other day. I had to have a, you know, I had to explain to the lady that my hands don't operate very well and I needed her to fill out the forms for me. She was really nice, she did. But, you know, it's kind of bad. It would have been really nice just to say, hi, I have CMT and, you know, going into the long explanation of yes, the nerves in my fingers are compromised and, you know, things like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know.
Well, I'm looking forward to the day. I think it's going to happen. Just from the time when I was a kid and it was this really under the radar. I mean, my doctors didn't even know about it. I would go to a neurologist and they'd be like, oh, I think I read about that in residency. You know, it wasn't on the radar at all. And now with the internet and with you and I being, you know, authors out there, getting our names out there, I think it's going to start to snowball. And
we get our own commercial, we'll know we've arrived.
Exactly. The day we have a celebrity on, you know, one of the big networks talking about us, it'll be a good day. So
who we need to get is what's her name? Is it Eartha Kitt? She played Catwoman.
Yes, the lady I'm trying to. Right, she has CMT, and her legs were insured for I think $6 million at one point. She was a dancer, and I think. That's one of the things that fascinates me about CMT is how diverse it is within the CMT community. Like, it can hit anyone, anytime, any year, any moment, and it will change things forever. And so I think that having that out there and having people realize how close it is, I mean, it's 1 in 2,500 people. That's not a big number. That's a lot of people.
I mean, that's one per neighborhood when you think about it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So I think we can do a lot of good just by, I mean, a cure. I'm hoping for a cure for sure. But sure. Just in the short term right now, what we actively can control is getting the word out there. So I really appreciate you coming on and sharing with me how it affects your life and your family so that we can get our stories out because It's.
I mean, you know, yeah, people need to know we're out here.
Yeah.
And that I think the deal is they want to see, when they think neuropathy, they really want to see somebody really either in a wheelchair or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And most of us can get by with just, you know, AFOs and a cane sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's another reason we're not quite as vocal because we're not really as visible.
True.
If we wear a pair of pants instead of shorts, most people would never know there's, you know.
Right.
I mean.
Right. Well, I have people that have known me for my entire life, and they have no idea that I have these challenges. And I'm not one that hides it necessarily. I don't wear, you know, a sign. I guess I could make t-shirts, but I don't have, you know, I don't go, hey, I'm Lincoln, I have CMT. But I'm not someone that hides it. You know, if we go on a hike, I'll be all, no, not so much. And here's why. But it's not something that is visible. And that's one of my big challenges is that whole hidden disability story of trying to manage a life that people don't think you should even need to manage because you don't look like you should.
Yeah,
so
it's like there's not anything greatly visibly wrong. You know, there's the temptation to just say, a cane and I'm fine.
Yeah.
You know? And people don't really need to know.
Right.
But at the same time, like you said, that doesn't get awareness out a whole lot.
No.
And so I mean, in my case, I wear shorts because, like I said, these braces are hot, so everybody knows, but I know a lot of people don't.
Right. Right. Well, you would be proud of me. I was brave this summer. I wore capris with my braces.
Oh,
cool. So I did. I took that leap, and I was showing them off, and it was exactly like you said. I actually got treated better when people could see the braces, because they provided a story for them of like, oh, this is why she's letting her 2-year-old.
Like, okay, it legitimizes that you've got a problem.
Yes.
You know, or a challenge. They stop and say, well, okay, if he's got to wear that, then he's not just, you know.
Yeah.
Exaggerating things.
Right. He's not just making it up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I know for myself, I think it's partly human nature, too. There are days when I go, oh, it's not that big of a deal, you know, because it is that visual piece. And I go, it's not that big of a deal. And then I'll have a week like I had this week, or I do, oh, gosh, clean my kid's room and I'm laid out for 3 days. And I go, no, it kind of is a big deal. It's a really big deal. And for me, it is a big deal. I mean, yeah, I can't, I can't work full time, and I can't do any kind of activities with my kids that involve anything physical anymore. Going for a walk around the block is a major undertaking, you know, that I have to really decide, do I have 3 hours this afternoon to recover from walking around the block? You know, it's all the negotiating with yourself that it's exhausting.
Well, that's it. You're having to sit there and say, okay, I've got X amount of energy.
Yeah.
However I'm using it, it's gone.
Yeah.
And it takes very little effort to start using it. It's not like you can just kind of coast on autopilot. And like before I came down with DMC, you know, there were a lot of things you could do that really don't burn energy. Now everything burns energy.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, all right, how much am I going to withdraw from my daily allotment?
It's totally true.
If I reach that certain point, I'm withdrawing from tomorrow's now.
Right, right. And then you get to that point where you're scraping the bottom and there's nothing left. And you're like, if I keep scraping the bottom like this, I'm risking some injury or complete setback that is could last months or forever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I did it. Yeah, I did it the 5 years ago where I did too much hand work. I was just having a good time making this stuff, and I did too much, and one of my joints slipped and pinched a nerve, and it's never been right since.
Mm.
You know, yeah, I mean, it'll go I'll get it fairly normal again, but if I go do hand work and knit, or within 20 minutes, it's starting to go numb again. So it's just forever now.
If I overdo with my legs,
uh-huh.
I can get by on AFOs.
Yeah.
But if I overdo too much, then my knees will get weak.
Uh-huh.
And now I do also have full leg braces, which, fingers crossed, I have still managed to avoid having to wear.
Uh-huh.
All the time. And but if I overdo it, my knees do get weak, and I would have to move to one of those braces.
Yeah.
And so it's always a matter of, you know, judging your what you got left.
Yeah.
Because you can hurt yourself by overdoing.
Yeah, you definitely can. So,
and,
well, on that side of things, for our audience that knows exactly what we're talking about, listening to us, I could see us really getting depressed and sad and frustrated and just living in a hole our whole lives and never having any fun because we have no energy. And the thing that fascinates me about the CMT community, people I've met with CMT, is we're not like that.
No, well, we can't afford to be. I mean, you know, we probably all went through that.
Yes.
You know, after a while, it really gets old.
It does. It gets really tiring.
It's like, you know, I don't even want to sit in the room with me when I'm getting that, you know, depressing.
No.
Right, knock it off.
Yeah.
And so you just, you know, after you get past that hurdle, it's like, okay, life goes on. This is life now, and, mm-hmm. you know, we're just going to work within these confines.
Yeah.
As long as the people around you understand, that really makes your life a lot easier.
Yeah, yeah.
Which really, I guess, to a degree, is one of the important things, getting back to DMT awareness. Then that can help us a whole lot if people just understand what our life is.
Yeah. It does. It makes a huge difference when someone says to me, because I get the guilt thing's a big one too. And like for me, it's at family gatherings when everyone's cleaning the kitchen or, you know, clearing up after the meals. And I'm like sitting there because I know that it's just going to waste me if I go do that. If someone comes over and just says, it's cool, don't worry about it, you know, here, have another margarita or whatever. It's like this weight gets taken off my shoulders of like, they get it. Mm-hmm. They understand. And they know that I would be in there if I could. And I want to be in there. It's not that I don't want to be helping. It's just that exactly. I can't. So it does. Those little things for people who are listening who are not affected by CMT or you mean, know we people, that just to say, I understand.
We are not lazybums.com.
We totally could. We're not unmotivated. In fact, I get the other side of it because people go, I don't know how you do like the photography and the writing and the webcast and the this and the that. And it's like, I very carefully allocate my time where it needs to go. And, but I also just can't sit still. I don't know what I would do if I didn't have CMT. I would never be sitting down.
Well, so. Again, it's like something. When I was first coming down with it, you know, if I lost things I could do, at first I didn't replace them.
Right.
Well, after a while, you wind up sitting there staring at a wall going, all right, this ain't any fun. You know?
Exactly.
So you kind of start hunting things to replace, and you're just like, all right, you just be realistic and say, all right, what can I do?
Yeah.
And then at least try to find a way to take pleasure in that and do it well, and that way you can take pride in it, and you feel better about yourself.
Exactly. And when you mentioned that, it made me think that, I had to stop doing the handwork, but stopping the handwork inspired me to pick up photography. And photography is one that's real attainable for me because you press a button and you don't have to do a whole lot of fiddling. So it is that trade-off of there are losses and there are also unexpected surprises around the corner. So I'm always excited when I find people like you that have a really positive outlook and who find the kind of hidden gems in the experience that we're having. And your writing is just amazing. I love your writing. So, and I know in our previous conversation, you kind of drew a connection between your writing and your CMT. And so as a fan of yours, yeah,
is about a guy who has pretty close to my challenges, you know, and I really don't think that somebody who doesn't have them could do it the same way, you know?
No.
Because, I mean, while trying to imagine it's one thing, knowing the little details like how deep carpet can be a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that, that's the difference, you know?
It
so,
is.
I mean, I can provide the little touches like that.
Yes. Yeah.
And,
well, I'll be excited to read it. And I know that something I've seen in your writing, too, is that whole uncertainty about life, that you never know when things are going to change and how they're going to change and what's coming at you next and what it's going to mean long term. And I think those of us who live in this story of not knowing what tomorrow is going to bring have this perspective. We don't take it for granted.
Well, we learn that there's a lot of things out there that's not in our control and that our best way of dealing with things is adapting when it comes.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
That sometimes you can't just sit there and make it all better. Sometimes you have to work around things.
Right.
You know, that there's a, you know, that there's a third option between overcoming something and being defeated by it.
It's,
you know, there's always another way to go.
Yeah.
And I think that's just, you know, one of the lessons that a lot of people with CMT learn. And that's one of the ways we keep ourselves in a pretty decent frame of mind.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I sure appreciate getting to talk to you, and I know for myself, I went through a really kind of frustrated place last winter, and that's what inspired me to start doing this whole podcast, because I'm like, I need to talk to people who understand what I'm mm-hmm. dealing with. And so I really appreciate that you are willing to come on and chat with me, and I can catch up with your adventures. Yeah. And your book and your stories are over on Amazon, right? At The Ways of Creme is a book that you can order a hard copy. I have one on my bookshelf. And then you also have Kindle books, too, that are
much
available
cheaper.
Much cheaper. And short stories that you're trying to put out one a month, which is very ambitious from my perspective.
I try to put out one short story a month if I can, if it's good.
Uh-huh.
But right now, like I said, I'm back to novel writing, so we shall see.
We shall see. We'll stay tuned. But we can catch up with you. Your blog is over at darkandstormyblog.blogspot.com, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll put a link over from our website, too, so that people can find it and hear about your adventures and keep track of your great sense of humor, too. You have wonderful humor about your family life and all the things that go on with your fiction and beyond fiction into reality, all that kind of good stuff, so... You're welcome. Well, thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate you being here.
It's been a pleasure.
And take good care of yourself.
Okay, you too.
All right, will do. I'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye. Hello, welcome back. We are getting to talk to Michelle now about her journey with CMT, and she has a blog that she records her perspectives, adventures, experiences on that you can go visit. It's over at myjourneywithcmt.blogspot.com, and we're really happy to have her and get to talk to her today. Welcome, Michelle.
Hi, how are you? I'm very happy to be a part of your show today.
Well, we're happy to have you. I'm doing well. We were just talking before I started recording how much fun it is to talk to other people with similar experiences and stories.
Yes, absolutely.
And you were saying that your blog has helped you connect with the people in the community that you would never have met otherwise. It started kind of small. And
yeah, I originally just started my blog as a lazy means to tell my day-to-day stories to my sisters who live in Brazil and to my parents and my boyfriend so that I wouldn't have to repeat the same story four times. So I literally just started as a means for them, and then little by little people started to find the blog and reach out to me. And I've met so many amazing and incredible people like yourself who I get to share my stories with and ask questions and advice and things like that I would have never expected. Just last week, somebody reached out from Ireland.
Wow.
Doesn't even have CMT, but appreciates the fact that I'm talking about my story and my struggle.
Uh-huh. That's amazing. I've had people from Australia and all over the world, so it's really neat to hear all the stories coming from everywhere.
Yeah, I just get super excited and giddy when anybody from anywhere gets in touch with me. So I've talked to people from Ohio, from California, from Australia, from and it's just, I never thought of it in that way. I just really wanted to just write about it, and then it's turned into something bigger than I expected, and that's something definitely bigger for the better.
Yay. Well, I'm really glad. You do tell amazing stories over there, and I encourage everyone to go read it. But for those people who haven't been over, what is your story with CMT? When did you get diagnosed, and do you know what type you have? All that kind of information,
yeah.
History.
My story with CMT started not knowing, obviously, anything about it, because when you do hear the word chakra Marie Tooth at your diagnosis, you have no idea what it is. I'm from a family in Brazil who a lot of us have these ugly feet.
Oh.
And we always make fun of each other for having these feet. And it's several people in my family, like my mother and my uncle and aunts and cousins. And my sister has a little bit, but not too much. So we just would sit around and laugh at them.
Uh-huh.
And I worked in New York City for 7 years. And that was a stressful commute with the bus and the train and the walking. And I started to feel a lot of pain, and a lot of calluses which started to grow at the bottom of my feet. So I actually used to extract those calluses with scissors myself. And many times I'd cut myself.
Ouch.
So then I said, this is ridiculous. I need to go to a doctor. So I started going to a podiatrist, and he would shave them off for me on a monthly basis.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, I saw him touching my left foot, and I could not feel the touch. And I said to him, that's strange. I see you touching it, but I don't feel it. So he's like, you know what, let me try poking it. So he grabbed something and started poking around, and there was a lot of it that I didn't feel.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the first time I heard the word charcoal Marie Tooth, and that was around 2004. So that is the point with that started my whole journey to, for my diagnosis. I did went to a neurologist. I got that horrifying, EMG?
Uh-huh.
NCV test, the nerve conductor test.
Yep.
That shocks you pretty much. And it's so I had it done 4 times in all. And I was eventually led to the hospital for joint diseases, their genetic department. And it was a doctor there that, did my DNA test and gave me the diagnosis of CMT type 1A.
Oh, okay. We have the same
type. In 2005. Yeah, in 2005.
Uh-huh.
And at that point, I really backed off because the information that they were giving, it's a lot at once, not knowing what it is and then hearing everything in front of you. So I backed off.
Yeah.
And I went back and I started doing some research. I went to physical therapy. But I've always had the calluses. So I, with every step that I've taken for probably the last 10 years, I have pain.
Oh.
And it doesn't. And then the nerve pain started uh-huh. in my feet. And I get these little, I would call them like thunders, because I would feel like a little thunder in my foot. And sometimes in the middle of driving or at night when I was trying to go to sleep, it would just be like little ants walking and the little tingling sensation. So I would stay up for an extra hour or two because I couldn't fall asleep.
Mm-hmm.
So they did give me a medication for that. That helps me to an extent. But I also have a lot of weakness in my legs,
mm-hmm.
a lot of muscle weakness. And I'm not able to walk too much or stand for too long because then I have extreme soreness for a few days after.
Mm-hmm. You get the payback. You have to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I in reading your blog, you have gone, this past year has been a big year for you because you've been having surgery.
Yeah, it's definitely, I took a leap this year.
Yeah.
Back in 2005 when I was diagnosed, they referred me to a surgeon immediately, and he just said, cut, I need to do the surgery, I can fix your heel. And at that time, it was just so much going on through my head that I just couldn't even hear the word surgery and being in bed. He told me 3 to 6 months each foot, and who has the time to take out?
Right.
To so much surgery. So I just shoved that into a drawer. And this year, my life worked in a way that allowed me to do this.
Mm-hmm.
I was moving from New Jersey to Connecticut, and I had to quit my job anyway. So I'm like, I have to quit my job. The job market is not that good. I wasn't seeing any attractive jobs in my field, which is marketing. So I just said, I'm just, this is the time. I'm going to do it now. And I am so glad to have done it.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead, sorry.
Oh, I was saying I have a personal interest in this discussion because I was diagnosed in 2004, 2005 with arthritis because of my high arches. They have wore away the cartilage, and that I went to the exact same discussion where they said they needed to do surgery, and it was presented to me as breaking pretty much every bone in my foot and then reconfiguring it and putting it back together. And
yeah.
So I've really put it way back in a drawer as far as, because I never got that 3 to 6 month recovery window in my life. And I always thought, well, it's probably better to manage it because you don't know what the fallout's going to be if you do take that leap. So I've been wanting to talk to you on a personal level just for that story to see how it's worked out for you.
Yeah. The whole thought of breaking your entire foot
yes.
and having to reconstruct it is something that's very scary. And I never had surgery. I never spent the night in the hospital before this.
Right.
So my surgery actually went really well. I had a great doctor in New York. I had great support from my family and my friends. But I didn't know what to expect because I never had surgery before. So I went through 7 weeks in the cast. As soon as we took the cast off, it was the most bizarre moment to see a different foot. But I just felt like they attached the foot that didn't belong to me to my body.
Yeah.
That was my first sensation of it. But now that it's been 5 months, I am walking great. It doesn't look like I had surgery. My arch is amazing. I have a couple of cool scars. So I'm not going to get bothered by having scars on my feet.
Right.
But I can tell the difference. It's so interesting because when I'm walking, I can't do hard with force.
Uh-huh.
And I can't do
a
fast pop. I would always shower in flip-flops because I couldn't stand in the shower because it was too painful.
Right.
So now I've been standing in the shower, and I do have the pain on my right foot, but it's bearable because I also have the left foot that works.
Okay.
So I have pain on the right side, and I have no pain on the left side.
So you kind of balance
which
a little
bit. Really, it's really amazing because my weight is just well distributed now.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm actually getting ready to do my surgery on my right foot in 2-3 days on Wednesday.
Wow.
And I it's kind of weird to say that I'm very excited for surgery, but I really am excited for surgery because I see how well my foot is now, and I'm ready to have 2 normal feet, and I'm ready to walk around in that and feel like everybody else. That was my first sensation when I put my 2 feet down and I felt pain on one side and no pain on the other side. I felt, wow, that's really how everybody must feel all the time.
Wow.
And it's a sensation that I haven't had. And I can't tell you the last time I didn't have calluses on my feet.
Yeah, that would be amazing. I mean, I can't imagine. Yeah. Right now, I've had that. I'm living your story there where every time I put my foot down, it hurts. I think part of it is they say that the muscle loss, the muscles create a cushion between your foot and the floor. And if you don't have the muscle tissue there supporting it, your nerves are right between the bone and the floor. And so you're pushing on your nerves every time you walk. And it's so funny that you said the hardwood floors, because when we were looking at houses, you know, people say, oh, hardwood floors. And I was like, no, I don't like
them. They have to be carpeted, right?
I need carpets.
Yeah.
So all these like high-end houses with their hardwood floors, I'm like, oh, that looks miserable. It was the opposite
story. Yeah,
that
looks painful.
Yes, it was very painful. So it would...
You know, one doctor told me that was a good description for the way my foot is.
Yeah.
Is that we are walking on high heels 24 hours a day.
That is
a good
description.
If you look at your foot and you don't look at the heel, it really is the elevation that a high heel shoe would give you.
It is. It really is. I call them Barbie doll feet. The whole time growing up, I would call my Barbie doll feet because they stand like those old Barbie dolls with on the very tippy toes. That's my foot relaxed. That's how it would like to be all the time. So, well, I will definitely be sending lots of good wishes on for your surgery
Thank
on
you.
Your foot and hoping that it all goes as well as the other one did. It sounds like you found some great doctors out there too.
Yeah, and really, at some point, you kind of have to face your fears, which is, you know, I didn't want to go through the process and the waiting and I was afraid of laying in bed because of the pain in my thighs that I
right.
had, which was really difficult at one point when I had to wean off the medication and just be on my own.
Mm-hmm.
The foot was fine. The foot didn't hurt, but my legs, I had about 1 week that I couldn't sleep.
Wow.
And, yeah, and then we tried a couple of different medications that didn't work, so I had to just pretty much wait it out.
Yeah.
And then the more mobile I got, the better the legs would get, but never that great, but it never got as bad as that 1 week.
Yeah, yeah, that was a lot.
And it's nice now to go into the second one having an expectation. Now I know, okay, I know what the hospital process is going to be.
Right.
I know what the cast process is going to be. I know how, you kind of know now. I have the mental images of what I went through.
Yeah.
Prepare for the second one.
Yeah, well, which will be very helpful. So it will be pretty much a year-long process for you once you come out on the other side of this. So
I could say that I was walking great at 3 months.
Okay.
And now it's 5 months later, and obviously it's much better.
Okay.
It kind of stopped getting swollen around 3.5 months,
mm-hmm.
which the doctor told me to prepare for a year. But it did stop getting swollen at 3.5 months. I also would like to point out that I am not working.
Uh-huh.
So I'm not having to balance recovering from surgery and going back to work.
Right.
That's something that I think is making a huge difference because I am just allowing my foot to recover. I would sit at home and I just leave it up, elevated.
Mm-hmm.
Anywhere that I would go, it was elevated. It was getting iced. So I literally just babied my foot the entire time.
Oh, that's great. You're really smart doing it at the timing you are, because I'm on the other side of having little kids, and that's my first thought is like, wow, I don't know how I would manage so I'm kind of waiting
really
until they get a little older, too.
Yeah, that was really one of my things, too. I'm like, well, I don't have any children right now, and I'm going to be the baby for a while, so mm-hmm. I really need to find some time to do it before I get to that step in my life. Yeah. And thank God that it worked out this way, that I did manage to find the time.
Yeah, yeah, that's great. Well, I'm really glad that you can share this whole story with all of us, because the theme this week, of course, is the CMT Awareness Week and getting the stories out there about how CMT affects your life. And I know by looking at the pictures of you and the stories, if you didn't know about your CMT, you wouldn't expect to have this kind of story in your life, you know. So, so what would...
And that's something too that...
Go ahead, sorry.
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say it.
What
would awareness?
I think you were going to ask what I was
going to
answer.
Okay, I think we were on the same page. What awareness would mean to you? How would it affect your life if people were more aware of what CMT meant?
Yeah, I was going to answer that question that I thought was coming.
Yeah.
Like you said, from looking at my pictures, from looking at me in my real life, I don't look sick. It doesn't look like there's anything wrong with me. And you're misjudged a lot because people really don't know. And even when you do explain, it's still difficult for them to understand.
Mm-hmm.
I do have a handicap sticker for my car. And there are times when I really need to use it. And I've been discriminated against that a few times by people seeing me walking in and out of my car.
Mm-hmm.
I've been a little bit like... Today I had a really difficult day. We were talking about this before you started to record, and I just had a simple fundraiser event last night. At one point I talked to one person who was really interested in becoming involved, and I had a conversation of about 20 to 30 minutes standing up, and I spent the entire day exhausted, physically and mentally exhausted and drained. And some people wouldn't normally understand that, and I feel like sometimes if they're not close enough, they may think that you're a little bit lazy. It's what I think sometimes. And when I'm at work, sometimes I'll ask people to deliver things to me instead of me going to pick it up,
mm-hmm.
and I'll try to shorten my trips with sending an email or giving them a phone call.
Mm-hmm.
And all those things can be very misinterpreted because people are really... looking at a person that looks fine.
Yes.
And CMT is something that doesn't affect everyone in the same way. Some people have their disabilities shown in a more heightened manner, which for me it's not. It's in my feet, and the bigger pain that I have is in my legs.
Mm-hmm.
I don't use a wheelchair normally outside of this whole surgery process. I don't use a cane. I don't use anything. So I think awareness would liberate some of us, would free us in a way that we don't feel the need to explain ourselves. If people just understood what CMT is and what it stands for, they would know that some of us have to do sometimes things a little bit slower or a little bit less so that we don't push that line that I feel that maybe I might have pushed last night,
mm-hmm.
so we don't have to spend the following day in bed and in pain.
Yeah. And the recovery is not in the public eye either. So when you see us out in public, it's kind of like Jekyll and Hyde almost. You're able to maintain this energy in public, and then you come home and you're just, whoa, what did I do to myself? So, and another hard challenge that I have is being young. I don't sense the line until I'm way over it. It's not until I wake up the next day that I go, oh, geez, I overdid it yesterday. Sometimes I'll get a little thing in the moment where I'm like, oh, I better sit down. But a lot of times you don't get a real solid sense of when you're pushing the limits too far.
I think our age, being younger, it's to the fact that you don't want to miss out.
Yes.
You don't want to miss out on life. And I sometimes do events and I'm like, I just want to, like, I went to a wedding and I'm like, I just want to dance, so I'm going to dance.
Yeah.
So people see me at the wedding and dancing, but doesn't this girl have feet problems?
Uh-huh.
And it's not until that night and the next day when the people that are in my close circle, like my boyfriend who I live with and my parents and siblings, they know what a mess I am the next day.
It's so true.
If we are going to be careful our entire lives, we're not going to really live. That's how I feel.
No, we can't.
So if there is an occasion when I want to dance, I want to dance.
Mm-hmm.
And then I know what's waiting me the next day.
Yeah. Willing to pay the piper, so to speak. But Yeah, it's true. And in that way, it's a little balancing act that we do, and we are fortunate in that we are able to dance and participate, but there is that other side of it that the public isn't really aware of, that the cost of those activities. So,
and I am naturally a happy person, mm-hmm. and CMT hasn't changed that about me. So I am always smiling. I am very talkative. As you can tell, I've cut you off quite a few times.
It's fine.
And I'm very social, right. You know? So when I'm with you, when you're present, so I don't want to bore you with, oh my God, my legs are hurting me. Oh my God, my feet are killing me.
Right.
That's the last thing I'm going to say to you.
Right.
So it's really, people, they see the outside social side of us, and I think the insiders are the ones that really help to pick us up.
It's very true. And also, for myself, I get tired of my stories. I get tired of saying that I'm tired. I get tired of saying that I'm having this challenge again, or my feet hurt again, or that, you know, it's like that, well, yeah, pretty much the same as last week. And so I don't talk about it that often, because it's the, what more can I say? It's the same story.
Yeah, and it's the same every day. My mom would ask me every morning when I lived with them, are you okay today? Are you okay today? How do you feel today? I say, Mom, it's bad every day.
Yeah.
But when it's really bad, I'll tell you. Otherwise, uh-huh. There's no point in me saying this to you every day. Like today, I'm really bad, and everyone knew I was really bad.
Yeah.
Today is the day when I need to share the fact that, please bring me an appetizer. Please bring me the soda.
Right.
At the birthday party that I had to go to because I couldn't disappoint a 10-year-old little girl that I love very much. So I still had to get up and go to her house. But I did con my mom into driving there with me.
Well, it's good that one of the things, the heroes of this whole journey is our families and our friends, because they really do make a huge difference in life for us. I can't imagine my life if I didn't have the support of my families and friends and the understanding that they bring. And if I could imagine that kind of understanding on a larger scale, that would be huge. That's a nice day to dream of when people would be aware like that. So that's part of why I'm bringing our stories together, and I want to get them out there, because I think that it is a very interesting life that we all lead, and very few people know about it. And if we could get more awareness out there, I think that it could help change maybe the research or whatever to change some of these stories, which would be nice.
So, I absolutely agree. Hmm. I think CMT needs the support of their family members and their friends. But I think it would be really, really nice to not to have to deal with the looks and the stares and have to explain why you need to park in the handicapped spot. And it would help to not have the questioning from people that really don't need to know more. If Charcot-Marie-Tooth were a more well-known condition out there, I think we would be treated a lot differently. And I really hope and look forward to that day as well. But I want to say something very interesting that my mom said to me once.
Yeah.
And I was really frustrated by the way I went to a baby shower, and the parking attendant did not want to let me park in that spot, and I was having a bad day like today.
Right.
So I ended up fighting with him, and I took the spot, and I came home very frustrated. And I'm like, if people could just see what I feel. And she goes, well, Michelle, at least you look normal. At least you don't have the stares all the time. At least mm-hmm. you're a happy young woman who looks fine and just has her bad days like today.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to deal with people like that on a regular basis. It's just once in a while when you really can't take it. And that gave me some perspective, because do I really want people everywhere that I go to question me and what I have?
Mm-hmm.
Because even when I was in the wheelchair and the cast, or even in the wheelchair in the booth, people really stare a lot. People can't stop themselves. They're probably thinking, what is this young girl doing in a wheelchair?
Mm-hmm.
But I have no balance because of CMT, so I couldn't use the crutches.
No. Well, I have no strength in my arms either.
I could use them with the strength, but when I land on my foot, I'm mm-hmm. going to the left or the right or back and forth.
Right.
So I needed a walker. So people are like, why are you using a walker? You're only like 29. So it's a lot that you have to explain. Not only do you have, and my dad actually said to me, well, Michelle, work on your balance.
Right.
My dad, it's not something that you work on.
Right.
It's something that I don't have. Where right. do you begin working on it?
Yeah. My dad used to try and teach me to walk with my heels first because I was a tippy toe walker when I was a kid. And I've had people try and teach me how to walk or balance or go down hills. And I'm like, you just don't know. You don't understand. It's bigger than that. So it's hard.
And I think that's the biggest part of this blog community that is out there, which I was completely unaware of. I think it's so nice to be able for me to talk to someone like you who is thousands of miles away, who knows exactly how I feel, who knows exactly about my story, that I can tell you that this is how I was as a child, and you say, oh, I went through the same thing, and I didn't know it was CMT. And I just love those conversations because it's like finally somebody really knows, you know?
That's my same feeling, and that's why I'm so grateful for this whole internet community that I've discovered, stumbled into. For the same reasons you have, I was trying to make shortcuts and communicate better and ended up finding people like you that I didn't know existed. And it makes such a difference because we feel so alone sometimes. Even with the support of family and friends, it's hard to say, you know, for the 10,000th time, yeah, I'm really tired again today. But you tell me your story about the party and I'm there. I know it. I've been to those family events and you stick it out and you work hard because you don't want to disappoint anyone. And then you come home and you just, you're paying for it. So it means a big, big deal. And that's why I'm hoping that this CMT Awareness Week will get some of the stories into the higher levels of media out of our little blog circles, because it could make a big difference for millions of people out there to know that they aren't alone. So I'm optimistic.
I think it will. And I think this is the first of many to come.
Yeah.
I'm a hopeless person I'm very hopeful in everything in my life.
Yeah.
And I believe that this is the first of many. And one day I plan to have children, and whether or not those children have CMT, their lives of growing up as kids, children with CMT will be completely different from my story.
Right.
That is my hope. That fine, we are going through this and we are pushing the boundaries, but hopefully the next generation will have to.
Yeah. Yeah, that's my hope too, is I'm trying to rewrite the story for us on what it means and to change that paradigm of the better you hide it, the more successful you're managing it, and instead try and create an open environment where we try and find compromises to feel better and do the things that we need to do, so, or want to do, I should say. So it's a very hopeful place. And you, I can just tell you, have such a positive attitude in the face of all of this. And it's amazing to me, all of the people I'm talking to that have CMT have these really rich kind of positive outlooks on life. And I love to see how, even though CMT has physically put a lot on our plate, it seems to enrich us in a lot of ways as well, emotionally, mentally, you know, appreciating our world. So
I just think that having CMT should not stop who I am, and it shouldn't stop my life. I truly believe that I just need to keep going forward. There are many, I'm in a lot of pain today, but I'm going to say that there are many worse things out there. I could be going through chemo. I could be going through a difficult cancer. And when I'm having a bad day like today, that's what I try to think of. It can always be worse.
That's a good perspective.
It gives me a perspective that, yes, I'm worse off than a lot of people, especially all the people that were at the birthday party today were feeling much better than I was.
Right.
But that doesn't help for you to look at the people that are doing better than you. You really need to look at the people that are dealing with more difficult situations. And I just think that we can't dwell on it. I just think that it's fine. It is a part of who we are, but we just need to live life. And like I said, if we want to go ahead and do something that's within, we do have to adjust our lifestyle.
Yes.
I cannot do today what I could do 6-7 years ago. And I see the difference. And I'm a 29-year-old that doesn't live like I'm a 29-year-old anymore. Right. I don't do nightclubs. I don't do dancing, you know, wildly. I mean, if I go to the wedding, yes, I do like to do the YMCA and do those kinds of things. But I do manage it. I think we are constantly aware of our body. Even if we go over and we do more than we should, we are constantly aware of, okay, I need to take a break and sit down. Okay, I've had my fun and now I'm going to go home.
Uh-huh.
But still do it.
Yes.
But not cut it all out.
Right. It's not a matter of all or nothing. It's not black or white. It's a dance. Definitely a dance. So,
yeah.
Well, I so appreciate talking to you and having you come and share your story with us. And I have a feeling I'll be talking to you more in the future about your adventures.
Yes, I hope so.
Yeah, definitely. And thanks for coming. And I really think we're going to be making a difference here. And, it's amazing when you'll hear back the podcast. You're my third person I'm talking to. I'm not sure what order we're going to put them on the show, but you're going to hear our stories, these common threads coming through. And we have a lot that we can learn from each other and help each other with. So
it's really been a pleasure. As I mentioned to you before, I was a little worried, and I know I stumbled here and there. But it was my first time.
You did great.
Talking to you. And I think it'll be really nice. It'll touch somebody who is out there, isolated maybe, and who hasn't spoken to anyone, and one of our stories will resonate with them.
Yes.
And for me, that's what everything about this awareness is doing, everything that this blog is bringing to me, all these amazing people that I'm meeting and their stories that I've been sharing and back and forth and these conversations. You know, you can get on the phone with a person with TNT and be on for an hour and not even realize that you've been talking that long.
Exactly. It's so true.
I think this is amazing work that you're doing, and I really thank you for being such a big part of trying to spread the word and help us, essentially.
Oh, thank you. Well, I'm going to say goodbye for now, but I'm not going to hang up quite yet. So okay. I just want to extend again, thanks so much, and we'll be talking to you soon, I'm sure. Maybe we'll check in after your next surgery and see how that went. And
yeah, that would be fun.
Keep the story going. Okay, take care of yourself. All right, bye.
All right.